Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Adoption Focus. My name is Jennifer Jaworski, and I am a social worker with Adoption Associates of Michigan. This is Adoption Associates' premier talk radio blog show. Adoption Associates and its staff are trusted leaders in adoption, and we have placed well over 5,000 children into loving homes. Since 1990, we have advocated, supported, and nurtured both birth families and adoptive families. Our offices are located in Jenison, Lansing, Farmington Hills, and Saginaw, and helping families and birth mothers grow through the adoption process is real important to us. One of Adoption Associates' commitments is to this weekly radio show. So thank you for listening in today, and we hope that you find this forum to be inspirational, educational, and thought-provoking. If you'd like to call in during the show, we would welcome your call at 347-850-1100. Again, feel free to call us and ask any questions you may have about today's topic at 347-850-1100. And today we are talking about legal considerations in domestic adoption, and we're very excited to welcome to the show Shelley Nibbelink. Shelley, are you with us?
Yes. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. Thanks for being on Adoption Focus. We are going to talk about domestic adoption and all things legal. And could we maybe get started with you sharing a little bit about your work and experience in adoption?
Sure. I have been with Adoption Associates for over 20 years. I started as a caseworker, working primarily with birth parents and doing some home studies. And then as I was doing that, I just in my spare time, when I had any, I would help out our legal coordinator that was based here in our Jenison office whenever she needed an extra set of hands or was facing some deadlines that she needed some help meeting. And that was just always very interesting to me, the legal side of the process. And so, you know, just followed her lead and tried to learn as much from her as possible. And then about 8 years ago, she left to move on to other things, and I was offered the position. So I have been doing the legal work here for the agency for about 8 years.
So it's something you kind of grew into, and we definitely appreciate that.
It is. It's something I've always been interested in, and yeah, it was just a very, very good fit for me. So
perfect.
And having
perfect
the experience with the casework, working with the birth parents, having been to court hearings with birth parents, it I think helped a lot. So I knew what the what was happening from the caseworker side and the birth parent side, and that helps a lot when you're working with papers so that you can put the real people and real faces and the real situations behind just forms that you see every day.
Of course. So you mentioned birth parents. Could you share with our listeners the legal process for birth parents in general, maybe a bit of an overview of what that looks like?
Sure. This will be for in Michigan. Every state has their own adoption laws, and they all vary either slightly or significantly depending on where you live. But In Michigan, nothing is final until after the baby is born, and the legal process doesn't even start until after the baby is born. There's a little bit we can do during the pregnancy in terms of maybe looking for a birth father and determining his level of interest or cooperation, but the legal process itself doesn't start until a baby is born. And then at the hospital, the caseworker will have the birth mother just sign a petition asking the court to schedule a hearing on the matter, not signing away any rights or anything final, just simply asking the court to schedule a hearing. And then she would also sign paperwork to have the baby be allowed to be discharged either to the adoptive family or to agency care while that court hearing is pending. So then the caseworker gets all that paperwork to me. I work with the courts to get a hearing scheduled, and the caseworker will prepare the birth mom for the hearing and review with her what kind of questions she'll be asked, show her the documents ahead of time so that she can get all her questions answered in a non-threatening comfortable environment rather than in a courtroom. And then the caseworker will accompany the birth mother to the hearing. And then the hearing takes place with a judge or a court referee, and their job is to just make sure that she understands what her rights are, that no one is forcing her to do this, that type of thing.
Okay.
At the conclusion of that hearing, there is a 21-day appeal period or 21 days to ask for a rehearing, but it is not a change your mind period. Michigan does not have a set period of time to change your mind. The judge or the referee will be sure to tell her very clearly in court once she signs the documents it does become final. So we always want to make sure that the birth parents understand that up front too, that they need to be, you know, comfortable with and secure with their decision before we get to that court hearing.
Okay, that makes sense. What is the time frame for a birth mother who is wanting to make an adoption plan, I guess, from the time that she calls the agency to when she has completed that plan?
Well, like I said, we can't do anything from a legal standpoint until after the baby is born. So if she calls the agency while she's still pregnant, the caseworkers will work with her just to make sure she's comfortable with her decision, make sure she's got a hospital plan in place, she's identified an adoptive family she's comfortable with. And then once the baby is born, we begin working on that legal side of things. But there's no like time limit, like she has to have done this before the baby is a month old or 6 months old. But since we work with infants, most of the time the hearings happen, you know, shortly after the baby is born. And then depending on the county, because the process varies slightly depending on the county, the hearing could be anywhere from maybe 7 to 10 days after the baby is born, up to 6 or 8 weeks after the baby is born. Like I said, depending on the county, if it's a very busy county where courts are traditionally very clogged, takes a long time to get in, that could slow things up. The birth father situation might require additional time, where if we're still looking for him, or if we, you know, need to work with him some more before moving forward. So really that hearing could happen anywhere from a week to maybe 2 months after the baby is born. Obviously, we like to keep it moving for the birth mother. We don't like to have things just pending and holding out there when she's making this very difficult decision. We want to keep things moving for her, but at the same time, we don't want to pressure her to go before she is ready. So we also take that into consideration when scheduling a time frame for that hearing as well.
Okay. That makes sense. And you mentioned release or release hearing. What is a release hearing?
Well, what we refer to as the release hearing really has two parts. The first part of the hearing would be to identify the father and determine his rights in the situation. And then the second part is the birth mother's voluntary release. So for that first part of the hearing, to identify the father, the judge or the referee will ask questions of the birth mother to determine who the father is. In most cases, we don't have a husband or a father who has signed the birth certificate. So in that case, the court has to determine first who is the father of the child. He or she, the judge or the referee, will ask questions of the mother to determine when the child was conceived, who she was with during that time, if there was anybody else she was with during that time who could possibly be the father, why she believes so-and-so is the father, and just get at that basic information to determine who we're looking at here. The next part of that, then, is to determine his rights. Has he been notified of the pregnancy? Has he been informed about the adoption decision and the adoption plan? And to find out, you know, if he's supportive or if he has provided of the adoption plan or if he has provided any support for the mother or the baby. And just determine if he has some rights in this situation, or if he has waived his rights or has been so uninvolved that he has basically, you know, declared he has no interest in any rights. So that's the first part of the hearing.
The second part then is the birth mother's release. And that's where the judge or the referee explains to her her parental rights. And those parental rights are, you know, pretty basic rights. She obviously has the right to the care and the custody of her child. She has the right to make decisions for her child, such as where the child would go to school, to make medical decisions for the child, to determine what religion the child would be raised in, if any. There's some automatic inheritance rights. If something happened to the birth mother, that child is automatically her heir. Or if something would happen to the child, the birth mother becomes the heir of that child. And these are just basic parental rights that everybody has when a child is born to them. So the court wants to make sure she understands those rights and that she would be voluntarily giving up those rights if she goes ahead and signs the release.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the judge or referee also wants to make sure that no one is pressuring her to sign the paperwork or forcing her in any way, bribing her to complete the release. And he'll ask some questions about that to make sure that no one has promised her any money in exchange for her release or threatened her in any way if she doesn't follow through. And then also makes sure that she understands that the release can't be contingent on any other agreement she might have with the adoptive family. Like if they've agreed to exchange pictures and letters and get together for visits, the release can't depend on that. So it's the court's job to make sure she understands all this clearly, because, like I said, once she signs the paperwork, there isn't a change your mind period.
So essentially, the courts are looking to ensure that she's made a well-thought plan, that it is her choice, not someone else's, that it is what she believes to be in the best interest of the child, it sounds like.
Absolutely, absolutely. And these are closed court hearings as well. So there won't be anybody else sitting in the courtroom unless she brings a support person with her. But there aren't lawyers or people waiting for the next hearing sitting in the back. So it's a fairly intimate environment. If there are, then some sensitive details she needs to discuss in terms of who the father might be. There's no one listening in. The courts do this to protect her privacy and to make it, you know, as non-threatening for her as possible.
Right, and we definitely appreciate their awareness of the need for privacy in these adoption matters. Tell us, Shelley, what happens after the release hearing?
Well, like I said, after the release, there isn't a change your mind period. They will inform her that she has that 21 days to ask for a rehearing or to appeal. But that can really only be used in cases like fraud or coercion. I like to use the example, like for fraud, if she had chosen the family of Fred and Sarah, and at the last minute we switched the family on her and really gave the baby to Nick and Joanne instead, she would maybe have a cause to go back to court and say, you know, the adoption agency assured me that my choices would be honored, and they weren't. We obviously would never do that to a birth mother. That would just be, you know, completely terrible. But it would have to be something that significant, some major instance of fraud, or maybe coercion where she just did not feel she could admit in that hearing that she was being threatened in some way, but then on her own, you know, after the hearing, notified the court that really someone had threatened me, then they might rehear the case. Or if there was a matter of law that was not followed correctly, if we as an agency did not follow the adoption code correctly, that might give her or maybe the birth father grounds to appeal. But again, it happens very, very rarely, and we've been doing this for many years, so obviously, one of our goals is to make sure it's done correctly the first time to make sure nothing threatens that adoption going forward.
Right. So good information, but at the same time, not something that's part of everyday legal work in adoption is what it sounds
exactly.
like you're saying.
Exactly. You know, the legislature put that in there, the courts put that in there so that you could plan for those kind of outrageous contingency cases, but it's certainly not the norm that something like that would happen.
So what about the birth father? Tell us how he fits into this legal picture with it, the adoption.
Well, obviously, we would prefer that he cooperates with the adoption, is agreeable, is involved and supportive, you know, of the birth mother, of each other during the process, during the pregnancy, during the adoption planning. That obviously is best for everyone. He then, you know, gets to help make decisions regarding the adoption, be involved, get to know the adoptive parents, you know, continue that contact with them down the road, and they'll be able to tell the child as the child is growing older that they've met the birth father, they know about him, and they can share information about him with the child. Unfortunately, that does not happen way as often as we would like. But if one of the first questions we need to ask then, if the father is not involved in the adoption process, we need to ask the mother if she has been married at all from the time of conception to the time of birth. If she was married at any time, whether or not that man is the biological father of the child, the court automatically presumes him or declares him to be the legal father of that child, and he must agree with the adoption plan. There isn't a way to do it without his support if they are married. So that's very important. And obviously we work with birth fathers, husbands, you know, to help them understand the process, if they have questions, answer questions, just to keep them involved and do what we can to make sure they've gotten good information that they need to make a decision regarding the child too. But
sure.
If the birth mother has not been married at all, then we have a couple of options regarding the father. He can go ahead and release in court just like the birth mother. That's always welcome. Like I said, we really like it and appreciate it when the father is involved and supportive. If he can't come to court for some reason or just wants to be involved but maybe not that involved, there is a waiver of notice and custody he can sign. And that it just simply notifies the court. He's telling the court, yes, I'm aware of the pregnancy, I'm aware of the adoption plan, and you don't have to send me an official notice of it. It's fine. Go ahead. He can indicate to the court that he is the father, he might be the father, or he's not the father, but basically lets them know, I'm aware of it, I don't want to be involved, go ahead with what you want to do. So that's something we can actually do before the baby's even born and submit to court, you know, once we get that legal process started.
Okay.
If he hasn't signed a waiver, if he's not going to release in court, if he's not cooperating with us, then we do have to notice him of the scheduled court hearing, notice him of the baby's birth, that there's an adoption plan pending, and that there's a court hearing scheduled on the matter. If he does not appear at that hearing, his rights are automatically terminated. And that does happen in the majority of cases where we have to notice the father. Most of the time, if he has not been involved or cooperated prior to this point, he just really doesn't want to be involved, and we get him noticed of the hearing and he doesn't appear. So then his rights are terminated, we move forward, and that's all we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
There are some cases, though, where we don't know who he is or we can't find him. And that, you know, makes life a little trickier for caseworkers. In those cases, the adoption code says that we need to make a reasonable effort to identify him and locate him. And then we need to explain those efforts that we made under oath to the court. This usually involves hiring a private investigator to make sure we've covered all our bases. And then once the court determines that we have made a reasonable effort to locate him, they will terminate his rights, and we can move forward.
And obviously we're talking about, you know, what this looks like legally, but, you know, when we're talking about birth fathers, in no way are we, you know, attempting to minimize the emotional impact that placing a child for adoption may have on them. You know, and sometimes we do see cases where birth fathers just need a little extra time to contemplate what they also believe to be in the best interest of the child. And maybe they didn't have the full amount of time the birth mother had to come to that conclusion. And sometimes they, you know, they do come to the decision that they also agree with the choice that she's making for adoption. But having said that, you know, some gentlemen do, after contemplation, decide that maybe they just don't agree that this is a good idea. Briefly, if you will, just share what that looks like and what happens if the birth father says to the birth mother or to the caseworker that I don't agree with this, I'm not going to consent to this. What happens?
Well, like I said, if they were married at any time from conception of the child until birth, if he doesn't agree, then the adoption plan is finished. It cannot move forward. The husband and wife can take the court or take the case to maybe a custody hearing and determine how to go forward from there. But if they are married or were married and he doesn't agree, then they need to make other arrangements. But in most cases, they are not married. And then we do notice him of the hearing if he is not agreed to the adoption plan, and he needs to appear and ask for custody of the child. What usually happens is, you know, there's a short hearing first where he appears, asks for custody, the court, you know, confirms his address, his level of interest, and then they will schedule a second hearing. If that first hearing is with a referee, they'll make sure that the second hearing is in front of a judge, and then lawyers get involved. The court will usually appoint an attorney for the father if he cannot afford one. And then a judge will then determine what is in the child's best interest. Can he provide a stable life? Can he meet the child's needs? Is he going to be a good influence on raising a child? So the adoption code actually has a list of items that a judge looks at to determine, you know, how can we tell what's going to be best for this child? And that's what the lawyers do. They, you know, present evidence or take testimony to let the judge know what they feel will be best for this child.
Mm-hmm. And in our state, Michigan, we have something that's relatively new, a couple of years, I suppose, that I was hoping you would touch on briefly, the releases that happen out of court. We call those out-of-court releases. give us a little bit of insight about those.
Okay, this is relatively new, went into effect maybe about a year and a half ago or so, and there are several other states that do something similar where the birth parents do not have to actually attend a court hearing to release their rights, and Michigan is trying to kind of come up with something comparable to that. So in Michigan, if they are going to do this out of court, the birth parents can have their rights explained to them by an attorney, and they can sign a release document that's similar to the one they sign in court, but, you know, very similar, accomplishes the same thing, but they sign it with an attorney and with their caseworker without having to go to a court hearing. There's a couple extra rules for that. The baby must be at least 72 hours old. It cannot involve a child with any Native American heritage or what's defined as an Indian child. And then as an agency, we've, you know, determined that it is not a good situation to do if there's a difficult birth father situation, because it is simply a release. It is not the part of the hearing to determine the identity of the father. So, we want to make sure that there are no questions about paternity that would cause the birth mother to then have to go to court anyway just to talk about that. So, but that just allows her to sign with an attorney and a caseworker, maybe closer to her home or without the added stress of attending a hearing. A difference with an out-of-court release is she does have 5 days to request a revocation of that release. But again, it's not an automatic, you know, the judge will overturn the original release. The judge would then decide what's in the child's best interest again. So,
and so this decision is on a case-by-case basis. And so a birth mother thinking about a release hearing or an out-of-court release, it's really something that needs to be discussed privately and personally based upon the situation and the circumstances, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Maybe you have a birth mother, birth father who have several other children at home, and maybe one of the parents works full-time. It's difficult to arrange childcare or to get that extra time off of work. And an out-of-court release would allow them to meet with an attorney and a caseworker maybe after business hours or a weekend that's more convenient for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for that clarification. So we are approaching the end of the show. So if we have any listeners out there that, you know, wanted to ask Shelley a quick question, we're soon going to be running out of time. So feel free to call in at 347-850-1100. In the meantime, Shelley, one other thing I wanted to chat about, as a caseworker myself, I often hear from adoptive parents the question about their role and some confusion about their attendance at this release hearing. And it seems that many adoptive parents are under the impression that that's something that they are supposed to be at. Can you talk about that issue as well as what is the role of the adoptive family during this time?
Well, from a legal standpoint, again, now for the adoptive parents, their legal process doesn't start until after the birth parent legal process is completed. So they do not attend that hearing with the birth parents. In fact, in most cases, judges prefer that they don't attend because there could be a question of coercion or an adoptive parent seeming to ensure that the birth parents follow through because they're sitting right there with them. That's not always the case. I know there have been a lot of very supportive adoptive parents who are just simply helping out and they've developed a good relationship. And we're not saying they can't be involved that day at all, but the court would really prefer that they not actually attend the hearing. So if the adoptive parents want to be supportive of the birth parents that day, we often suggest that, you know, they maybe meet outside the courthouse somewhere, maybe meet for lunch or, you know, meet for, you know, just to get together somewhere after the hearing is completed, just to make sure that there's no question of impropriety and to keep things very above board and transparent. So
right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so their role really comes in after the hearing in terms of the post-placement requirements, the caseworker coming to their home, those visits that occur thereafter. And we don't necessarily have to get into that here in this conversation, but that's where they kind of pick up. Is that right?
Right, right. They have a bunch of paperwork that they have to sign themselves, but they do that at one of our offices with one of the agency directors who reviews the paperwork with them. This includes their petition for adoption, an application to create a new birth certificate with them listed as the child's parents. So we do all that paperwork with them, and then we can file that with the court right after birth parent rights have been terminated. And the court reviews that, including the family's home study. And after approving it, the judge signs what's called an order placing child, which gives the family formal custody of the child pending that finalization, you know, 3 or 6 months down the road.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so we are definitely at the end of the show here. A great big thank you, Shelley, for being with us today and for sharing this information. I know that it was a really, really good show.
You're welcome. Very welcome.
For our listeners that are looking to connect with Adoption Associates, you may call us at 800-677-2367. One more time, 800-677-2367, or visit us on the web at adoptionassociates.net. Remember, we are live every Tuesday at 11, and I hope that you join us next week when we speak with Nikki Racine about something that we're really excited about. Our annual 5K is coming up for Adoption Associates. It's a wonderful family time, and I hope that you'll listen to how you can get involved and how important it is for you to consider being involved in our 5K. For now, once again, thanks for listening to Adoption Focus. This is Jennifer. Have a great day. Bye-bye.